WJFK AM Morningside
and WJFK HD3 Manassas. Always live on the free Odyssey app, DC's home for wagertainment.
Welcome back to You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM on Westwood One Sports.
Good morning. Welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here. We're going to be joined by Ant Heron. He covers the Big Ten here coming up in a little bit. We'll talk some college football with him in just a bit. Let me give you the preseason top 10 from the coaches poll. Number 10, Ole Miss. Number 9, Oklahoma. 8, Texas A&M. 7, Miami. 6, Indiana. Indiana had the second most first place votes behind Ohio State. Yes, we are here. Indiana is a college football powerhouse. Number 5, Notre Dame. 4, Texas. 3, Georgia. Number 2 is Oregon. And number 1, the Ohio State University. Those are the top teams in college football. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by Ant Heron. He played college football at the University of Iowa. He covers the Big Ten. He covers the sport. We are a couple of weeks away from getting things going. Ant, good morning. Happy to talk college football with you.
I appreciate you having me on the show. Yeah, I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start with this. It's got to feel good to see the Big Ten on top. We talked about the SEC for 20 years. They won all these national championships. They kept putting all these guys in the pros. All of a sudden, once everybody can start paying players, we've seen a radical shift, and now the Big Ten's on top.
That's pretty much how the not only the psychology, but really just the pure facts of it have gone so far. Now, the shift in psychology has been probably the fun part, sort of the unanticipated fun that's been there, because there have been a lot of complaints about the folks down south. But the SEC was on top for a long time and remarkably deep for years. But now in the NIL and transfer portal era, between the two aspects of college football from a player perspective that have adjusted most, yes, players being able to be compensated beyond the same scholarship I was getting decades ago, that's been a big difference. But the ability for talent to be dispersed at a variety of different schools, and where you don't have an individual program stockpiling talent and guys don't have to sort of wait their turn, quote unquote, you know, while they're backing up a quarterback or backing up a running back or backing up a pass rusher. They're looking for opportunities to get on the field. And when they can do that, yes, there are programs that are as deep as they've ever been, but there are also a number of programs that have guys who either come in with experience from elsewhere or say, you know what? I'm not really looking to wait my turn. I thought I was going to be able to break into the lineup. I've got 4 years of eligibility. Now it'll be 5 years of eligibility to get on the field and get this thing done as a college athlete, so they're able to pursue those opportunities elsewhere. So now the talent is dispersed in a way, and especially quarterback play in the Big Ten is deeper than we've ever seen it before.
And as we take a look at this coaches poll, I also saw the Big Ten preseason poll as well. It had Ohio State at the top. Do you think Ohio State's the best team in the country? Do you see them as the favorite coming into the season?
I don't. I see them amongst the favorites, but Oregon is more my pick to click than Ohio State. The Ducks right now, beyond Dante Moore returning for another season of major college football, where he could have gone to the NFL draft, been one of the top three picks, maybe, certainly one of the top five picks, but perhaps one of the top three picks in the NFL draft for how things would have played out with him going through the pre-draft cycle and just how exciting he is, not only as an athlete, but the maturity that he shows. So you've got the guy who will be in the conversation to be the number one overall pick in the next NFL draft cycle. He came back for another season in Eugene when he didn't have to. So not only that, but they'll right now going into the season assumed to be healthier at wide receiver, DeCorian Moore, Evan Stewart. They've got an offensive line that returns largely intact, a very deep backfield. But the defensive front for the Oregon Ducks, that's where the physical maturity, the mental and emotional stamina, that tends to show up for these national championship teams, especially what's been won from the Big Ten in recent years, whether you're talking Michigan, Ohio State, and then most recently Indiana. You saw a really experienced front seven on defense. that's just as dominant as any team in the country. That's what's been leading the Big Ten to these national championships as much as anything else. The quarterbacks are the darlings, and yes, myself as an old defensive lineman, there may be some bias in this statement, but when you look at what Oregon has back on the D-line with guys like Tatum Tuioti and Bear Alexander and Mateo Uiagalelei, they've got a lot of guys who could be in the NFL right now that return for another season. I believe it's the deepest and most talented defensive front in the country. That, to me, is what separates Oregon, because they're really good at, yeah, I'm going to say every position right now, like linebacker. That's maybe the one spot where I look at it and say, okay, do they have the best linebacker core in the Big Ten? Probably not, but they got a great secondary. They've got the best D-line in the country, and their offense is absolutely stellar. We'll see what happens at coordinator, but right now I'd go with the Ducks over the Buckeyes.
And as a guy who played in the Big Ten and covered the Big Ten, you're going to laugh at me for saying this. I didn't believe Indiana was good until last year's win against Penn State. Like, that was the one that I'm like, hey, maybe I've been disrespecting Indiana this entire time, because that first season I felt like it was completely built off the schedule, and then they fizzled out in the playoffs. Like, oh yeah, okay, I knew it. Then the next season I'm like, oh, it was a cute story, and now they'll go 9-3, they'll be okay. When Mendoza took them down the field and Omar Cooper toe-tapped them back, I'm like, oh, that seems for real. That seems good. I was on board the rest of the way. It is so remarkable what we've seen Indiana turn into over the last 3 years or so, where they are one of the five best programs in college football. What is it like to see their transformation over this time? When did you kind of have that epiphany of, oh, this is just not some blip in the radar? Like, this is a team that's on par with the Texases, the Georgias, the Ohio States.
So during the season last year, and frankly, I can even go back to the preseason, because the year before, when IU made the CFP in Kurt Cignetti's first season and then ended up losing a tough game to Notre Dame. Notre Dame was blowing everybody else out. Indiana played the Irish closer than anybody else did on their way towards making the national championship game. But with that being said, Indiana was wiping the floor with everybody in Cignetti's first season. So that, to me, was the separating factor, just in looking at their schedule and say, yeah, they didn't play some of the best teams in America, and a couple of teams who usually are good were down that year. All those things were true, but man, were they dominant. And that matters, at least in my mind, and it did end up mining in the matter of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. But last season, to go on the road to Eugene, to go on the road to Iowa City, to go on the road, to your point, to Beaver Stadium in State College, and that wasn't one of the great all-time Penn State teams, but they were the squad last year, Penn State, that had a bunch of talent that could have gone to the NFL at quarterback and running back and defensive line. All those guys returned. They fell flat on their face and James Franklin got fired. But those are all the same guys that were having and showing that physical ability and nearly took down the Hoosiers. And then those dramatics took place for Fernando Mendoza. And that just kind of became a part of Indiana's resume. They had a bunch of those kind of wins where they had to sort of, you know, stand up against a few late mistakes and find their way back into games in hostile road environments. The Southeastern Conference can talk about all their hostile road environments as they want to. Big Ten's got just as many, if not more. So when you win a game like that, dramatic fashion, in Iowa City and in Eugene and in Beaver Stadium and State College, like, all those things matter when you're kind of formulating your national championship DNA. And that was as impressive as anything that Indiana did last season. What'll be interesting to me about the Hoosiers this year is that there was kind of a core in place. A lot of it was James Madison players that Kurt Cignetti brought with him through his first couple of seasons, and then he supplemented with a transfer portal quarterback. And there were a few guys who had already predated him in Bloomington that he nurtured and developed within his system and helped lead them to a national championship. That being said, this year, there's a lot of turnover in the Indiana roster. Now, I'll be fascinated to see not only the newness that's going to be there with the Hoosiers, but then you factor in that I'd say this is probably going to be the most physically talented team that Kurt Cignetti's had. It's not going to be these guys with kind of the upstart underdog chip on their shoulder that has seemingly been one of the reasons that in the 2 years Cignetti's been there, there hasn't been one game that you can look at and say Indiana didn't show up ready to play, sharp and focused and near their peak. That's so hard to do with college student athletes, you know, to really have them mentally prepared to be at their peak on a weekly basis. That's been the elixir for Kurt Cignetti, to have them either blow the doors off a team they're obviously better than or be ready to stand up against a team who's probably overmatching them physically, which has been the case in the couple of years that Cignetti's been there at IU. He doesn't take the field with more talent than Ohio State or Oregon or even Penn State last season, but they find a way to get it done. And so that degree of focus and consistency, can he sustain that now with a largely new group of players who haven't really been in his system that long? I'll look forward to watching that. Just does that Kurt Cignetti secret sauce continue to sustain itself?
Right now, we're talking to Ant Heron, who covers the Big Ten, played at Iowa, just talking a little bit of college football. And if you look at the playoff odds right now to win the Big Ten, Ohio State is at plus 180, Oregon is at plus 260, Indiana is at plus 310, and then there is a massive gap between those three teams and everybody else in the Big Ten. I don't think that one of those other teams are going to win the league. I think you and I agree. The winner's going to be either Ohio State, Oregon, or Indiana. But there's always going to be a surprise. Penn State's going to be a lot better than people think and win nine games this year, or USC or Michigan or one of those kind of teams. Who is a team in the Big Ten that you like, not necessarily to win, but just be a surprise, be a much better team, kind of like how Ole Miss was in the SEC last year?
I think in that regard, I like USC. And, you know, don't get me wrong, USC has a really difficult schedule this season. So from a Trojans perspective, that does concern me a bit. But I was talking about teams that, you know, I mentioned Indiana maybe being the most physically talented version of the Hoosiers that have been there since Kurt Cignetti took over. I think Lincoln Riley's been building the Trojans up toward this point where not only are they going to have excellence at quarterback and playmaking at receiver, that'll be there. And getting to talk to Jade Maiva last week, I was very impressed just with how he carried himself. You know, seemed very comfortable in his own skin, and there was a confidence that he exuded that I think it's really going to serve him well, especially coming off the season that he put together last year. Yes, they lost a couple of the top receivers in college football with no Lemon or Lane coming back this year. But we know Lincoln Riley always finds wideouts. So I think the Trojans are going to pass the ball at a high level. What encourages me, though, is that USC began to run the football at a high level last year. It was the best rushing attack that Lincoln Riley's had since he's been leading things in SoCal. That should be really encouraging to Trojans fans, because you go back to his time at Oklahoma, those were his best Sooners teams, the ones that ran the football at a high level. That should bolster a defense that's gotten more and more talented every year that Lincoln Riley's been there. Now, he did lose Danton Lynn, who's no longer there with the Trojans, but then you bring in one of the, well, a guy who at least at a time was thought of as one of the top defensive minds in the sport in Gary Patterson. So how does that end up informing the way that the Trojans can operate defensively? I think that they're going to be good on defense. They're as experienced on the lines of scrimmage as they've been at any point, and they're deeper now, not only via the transfer portal, but what they've done in recruiting, top recruiting class in this last recruiting cycle. So it's just a deeper and especially a more physical version of USC football than Lincoln Riley's ever put on the field. So the Trojans, I see them as a team that will be right there in line to make Lincoln Riley's first college football playoff appearance.
And let's move from the Big Ten to the SEC. Georgia right now is at plus 290. Texas is at plus 330. There's then a big gap. Alabama plus 800. LSU plus 900. The public in Vegas see this as Georgia and Texas, a two-horse race to win the conference. Which of those teams do you like more to win the SEC? Do you like Georgia or Texas?
I'm in on Georgia. I think that, you know, both will be there in the mix, as I was kind of referencing when you look at what Ohio State and Oregon bring to the table. But I do think that the way that Kirby Smart has always been able to recruit, and the way that his program is kind of, you know, they're not accustomed to not being in the mix. And even more so than Alabama, where I'm a little bit wait and see on how great Kalen DeBoer can make the tide in Tuscaloosa. But this does feel to me like a season where we're going to see a version of the Georgia Bulldogs that's right back there competing for the SEC title, making the college football playoff, and who knows, fingers crossed from an SEC perspective, maybe that conference can actually start winning some playoff games. They haven't done a lot of that in the last few seasons. But I think, you know, Texas and Georgia splitting hairs a little bit. I am bullish on Arch Manning. You know, that people were out over their skis on Arch Manning last year with the Longhorns. But I do think now another season as a full-time starter, the growth we saw from him late in the season last year, I do anticipate that carrying over with Sark into a version of Arch Manning that I still don't think he's going to be the best quarterback in the country or the number one overall pick coming up, but he will be closer to the guy that a lot of folks were assuming he was going to be last season. But just top to bottom, looking at the running back position, the growth on defense, and having a returning starter at QB, I think Georgia's the squad to me that'll come out of the SEC.
Taking a closer look at the college football playoff, let's assume that Miami wins the ACC. They're the clear best team heading into the season. Let's assume that Texas Tech is going to win the Big 12. I think they're the best team in the Big 12. Do you think that either one of those conferences get another team? Because we know the Big 10 is going to get four or five teams. You know the SEC is going to get four or five teams. I think that the Big 12 gets one. I think the ACC gets one. Do you think there is another one playoff team between either of those two conferences?
I mean, it's tough to say because the ACC on an annual basis feels like sort of this crapshoot. We're not completely sure, but beyond Miami at this point, who's another team? And there tends to be another team that emerges in the conversation, but is there a Mensa that's going to lead Duke and have them be, you know, a much better team than many anticipated? I don't know who that is in the ACC this season, but I do know that conference values football. I do know those coaches have had great winning resumes in the past. They've just been left behind a little bit from a resource, a recruiting perspective. So for the ACC, that is a league that I've got my eye on. Just wondering, will there be another team? Can Dabo and Clemson kind of get themselves back into the mix? They're not far removed from being right there competing in a hotly contested college football playoff game. So I could see either league, the ACC or the Big 12, but just by what we've seen from them in recent years, the ACC is more the direction I lean. Because Florida State fans, you know, they're ready to run folks out of town down there in Tallahassee. So I think there's a few programs who, just from a brand identity perspective, I do think I could see them in that mix. But because of the portal era, it's hard to know for sure who that is during the preseason. I'm basing it largely on the respect I have for coaches of certain programs and what they've shown from themselves on their resumes historically.
I'll get you out of here with this last question, if you will go on this nostalgic journey with me for just a bit. I want you to think of the college football player that when you saw him play, your thought was, oh, he's different. Like when you see a Malachi Toney or you see a Jeremiah Smith, he's different. Like for me, that guy is Peter Warg. Anytime somebody posts a Peter Warg highlight, I'm stopping what I'm doing for the next 3 minutes, and I'm just watching Peter Warg just run by everybody. I still don't know if we've seen a college football player look like that and highlight the way that Peter Warg was when he was in his absolute prime. When you think of a college football player, you think, oh, he's different. Who's that guy that comes to mind for you?
So seeing a guy on that, I'll give you two versions of this. Seeing a guy on the field at the same time that I didn't necessarily have to compete directly against, but David Boston at Ohio State as a wide receiver.
Big physical guy.
Truly, he was the embodiment of a man amongst boys. You know, you just couldn't do anything with him. He was as big as any of the defensive ends out there, myself included, but all rocked up, lightning fast, and he had great hands. You know, I don't know if he just got too big when he got to the NFL or what, because he couldn't sustain it. In the league, he had a couple of nice seasons there, I think, with the Arizona Cardinals. But I didn't have to cover or really frequently try to tackle David Boston. But that was just a guy that made me say, wow, whenever I saw him when we were on the field at the same time against Ohio State. But the guy who I really tried to corral that just still gives me nightmares at this point was Antoine Randall-L as an Indiana quarterback. And the worst part is, not only did I have to chase him around in the Big Ten, we competed against each other in high school as well. I was at Bolingbrook High School. He was at Thornton, and he played quarterback back then, and he was just a guy who was ahead of his time. They wouldn't have moved Randall-L to wide receiver if he were in the draft sometime in recent years here. He would have been a Kyler Murray type, a Baker Mayfield type, one of these diminutive quarterbacks, you know, Bryce Young, who still has that true playmaking ability. And Antoine Randle had a live arm, an accurate arm, and he turned the Indiana Hoosiers at a time where they were right in the midst of being the losingest program in college football because of his sheer excellence. He turned them into a bowl team by the end of his career. It was one of the great feats in college football history. He was the best player in the country. If he was on a better team, he would have won the Heisman by the time he left Bloomington. So that, to me, as far as a guy who I just had to try to corral and compete against, nobody gave me fits like Antoine Randle.
Those are two good ones. David Boston, just big, physical Ohio State guy. Like, that's a good one. Like, I can imagine when you see him, I'm like, hold on. Like, I got to cover that guy. I got to tackle that guy. Yeah, no, David Boston's a good one. That is Ann Heron joining us on the show. He played at Iowa, played in the league, played in the Big Ten, and also currently does work with the Big Ten Network. Ant, great stuff, man. I love college football. I'm excited. It's right around the corner, man. Appreciate you popping on this morning.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. Good talking to you.
Absolutely. That's Ant Heron joining us on the show. Coming up on the other side, I want to play a very simple game called Pick One. I'll explain the rules. Keep it right here. It's You Better, You Bet.
Packers star Micah Parsons says an October return date against the Cowboys is realistic. Imagine that. His first game back against the team that traded him away.
People are worried about the knee.
Will Parsons be ready to pack a payback punch?
They should be worried about how I'm going to play when I get back.
Westwood One Sports.
I'm not one to say I told you so, but I switched to Pure Talk over a year ago, and ever since, I've been telling people there's no better wireless company out there. Well, a few months ago, a massive survey was conducted. 123,000 people were asked to rate their wireless carrier in four categories: coverage, support, data, and overall value. Well, the results are in. Guess which wireless company was the only wireless company to get 5 stars in every category? Yeah, Pure Talk. 5 stars every category. To celebrate, Pure Talk is offering the first 3 months of any plan for just $15 a month, including their top-tier unlimited plan. No contract, no commitment, just a very inexpensive way to test drive the only American wireless company with 5 stars in every category. Just dial #250, say micro, and Pure Talk's U.S. customer service will take it from there. Again, #250, micro. And yes, I told you so.
In the automotive industry, time and trust mean everything. Miss an electrical problem, and it can mean big problems for your operation. That's why NAPA believes in testing the 5 critical components in every vehicle: the battery, starter, alternator, relay, and serpentine belt. And why we deliver the parts, tools, and expertise you need to catch problems before they become breakdowns. So test every vehicle and trust the name that keeps your bays busy and your business moving full speed ahead.
NAPA Know-How!
I scream. You scream. We all scream. Because Wendy's famous small classic Frosty is just $1 for a limited time. More screaming, happy screaming, summer screaming, dollar small classic Frosty screaming! But please don't scream in the drive-thru. It hurts the employee's ears. Get a $1 small classic Frosty for a limited time, only at Wendy's.
U.S. price and participation may vary. A la carte only, not valid for delivery. Limit 10 per transaction. Price may be higher in Alaska and Hawaii.